Major funding for In Wisconsin is provided by the people of Alliant Energy, who bring safe, reliable, and environmentally friendly energy to keep homes, neighborhoods, and life in Wisconsin running smoothly. Alliant Energy, offering energy-saving ideas on the web.
Hello and welcome to In Wisconsin. I'm Patty Lowe. Each week we bring you stories about the people, places, and issues in our state. Tonight, residents of northern Wisconsin speak out on the economy and homeland security, and the nation listens. We'll also reflect back on how agriculture became such an integral part of Wisconsin life, a life that is both grueling and rewarding. Agriculture will certainly be on the agenda as candidates visit Wisconsin in advance of our presidential primary on February 17th. Prior to the primary, In Wisconsin will examine candidates' stances on issues of particular importance to state voters. We'll look at ag issues and prescription drug plans. Tonight, Frederica Freiberg begins this special series of reports with a look at manufacturing.
Our bread and butter for, you know, most of the last 70 years has been that manufacturing sector, maybe even more than 70 years. But going back into the 1920s and 1915, we've been a big manufacturing state, and we've stayed that way.
The state's chief economist says Wisconsin ranks second only to Indiana in the percentage of workers employed in manufacturing. More than a half million such workers here. But those manufacturing jobs are in a free fall. Since 2000, Wisconsin has lost nearly 80,000 such jobs.
That's extraordinary loss for a sector as important to us as manufacturing is.
That loss has a face, thousands of faces.
I'm trying not to be bitter about it.
Sue Kruger worked for AMCO Metal in Milwaukee for more than 30 years.
The corner office there was mine.
Right there.
Mm-hmm.
Working her way up the ladder, Kruger was human resources manager when AMCO closed the plant just before the holidays.
Like leaving home. 30 years. I miss the people.
Nearly 100 workers at this Milwaukee metal plant lost their jobs. Don Dobrot says when he started with AMCO in 1965, 750 people worked at the plant. The days, he says, when Milwaukee was proudly known as the machine shop of the world. A developer now plans to raise the AMCO property.
There was very little money put into this plant, and that's the biggest problem why it shut down. It became obsolete.
But there's another reason. Chinese competition. AMCO union leaders say the Chinese started doing some of the same type metal work cheaper. As a result, displaced workers from AMCO are getting tuition assistance from a federal trade program that helps employees that are hurt by foreign competition.
We cannot continue on this path because these are family supporting jobs, and they're going to be pretty hard to replace for the majority of our people.
And because you acted to stimulate our economy with tax relief, this economy is strong and growing stronger.
President Bush drew applause for that assessment in his State of the Union address. But workers in the former machine shop of the world don't feel like they're experiencing an economy that's strong and growing stronger. That's because Wisconsin manufacturing job loss continues. According to just-released state figures, 2003 marked that sector's fourth straight year of decline in Wisconsin.
So where is the growth? I mean, I guess that old saying about where's the beef is the key here. I think one of the interesting things about that growth is I'm a little bit anxious about some of it may be growth generated in China that shows up in our gross national product because of overall, you know, product level, but doesn't show up in our general economy that most people are. You know, that strikes most people, that is their jobs and their wages.
So in other words, there's growth because we're actually purchasing things back from China that they're making that we used to?
Correct. That shows up in our overall product.
We routinely get undercut by anywhere from 33 to 65% under our price. So
Mike Retzer is controller at WG Strohwig Tool and Die in suburban Milwaukee. And while his business is going strong now, he worries about its future. He blames unchecked free trade for manufacturing job loss and plant closings all around him.
You drive through Milwaukee, and every month it seems there's more vacancies in not only retail, but factories closing up. Across the country, it's the same story. I fear for our future, and not our future long term. This is all happening so quick that we've only got a couple years to fix it, or we're going to lose the critical mass necessary to have a manufacturing infrastructure like we have.
The manufacturing infrastructure at this plant is cutting edge. Retzer says it has to be to keep up. He says this company invests millions of dollars each year in new technology.
As you can see here, we're cutting, again, with high speed, cutting copper beryllium, which becomes part of the plastic injection mold.
And obviously all very high tech.
Yes. This is being run from a computer program that was loaded, and we set it up and go on to the next machine while this runs. And so in essence, this is now running with no labor.
Very highly skilled labor, though, that which you have here.
Absolutely. This is high tech manufacturing. We train our employees constantly.
So compared to one of your employees that might make on average more than $50,000 a year, what are they making in China?
Boy, they're making 27 to 50 cents an hour from what I understand, maybe up to 90 cents in the more populous coastal cities, but that's for a fully trained engineer. So we hardly stand a chance.
But to stand any chance at all, state economist Terry Ludeman says companies must upgrade.
First and most important, we have to get more productive with the workers that we have in manufacturing. We have to raise our production, our total overall value in that industry. One of the ways you do that is you bring the technology to bear in that particular industry. That means we have to somehow generate investment in that manufacturing sector.
How do you compete against the millions of highly educated Chinese and Indians that are now doing some of this work for much less money?
Well, I think that's a good question, but again, you have to keep going back to productivity. You have to keep going back to how can we raise our workers beyond that. Now, one of the problems has been lately that the capital has flowed to China. That's where the investment has taken place, rather than here. So something we have to do in Wisconsin, as well as the United States, is find a way to get that investment to seek our places, our geographic areas, rather than China. Now, I know that's easier said than done, but that's a puzzle that we very simply have to solve.
Most all the candidates for president say they have the policy pieces to help solve that puzzle. On the issue of job creation, President Bush stands behind his tax cuts, dividend and capital gains tax relief, and his newly announced worker training plan. That plan would funnel $250 million to community colleges for training workers in high-tech job skills. Several Democratic candidates propose old-fashioned public works projects to put Americans back to work. Kucinich would put $500 billion into rebuilding schools, buildings, and bridges. Sharpton, about half that. Dean, too, includes rebuilding infrastructure in his $100 billion fund to restore America. These Democratic candidates propose tax credits to manufacturers who create jobs. Several call for eliminating corporate loopholes they say create incentives for American companies to set up overseas. On the issue of trade, President Bush says he stands committed to free trade, wants to lower trade barriers, and make agreements with individual countries. All the Democratic candidates want strict enforcement of trade agreement rules, especially in the area of labor and environmental standards. Some of the Democrats come out swinging on trade issues, Sharpton and Kucinich opposing the North America Free Trade Agreement. The candidates' platforms don't apparently offer much comfort to workers who just lost their jobs.
Our politicians pay lip service, and that's about it.
None of what happens in the race for the White House can come soon enough for people already shut out of manufacturing jobs in Wisconsin. But policy shifts could shape what happens next.
Next week, Frederica Freiberg reports on the state of Wisconsin's dairy industry and how the presidential candidates weigh in on dairy issues. You can get more information on the candidates and their views by logging on to www.wisconsinvote.org. We move now from Wisconsin's economic future to its agricultural past. Author Jerry Apps delights in sharing details from his days growing up on a Washera County dairy farm. His books recall a time when the work was hard, but the pace of life was perhaps a little slower.
It is mid-August, and I'm standing at the edge of a large field on my farm. A slight breeze blows from the southwest. The field where I stand is no longer cultivated, hasn't been for more than 40 years. Yet among the wild grasses that have returned to this land that was once prairie, big blue stem, little blue stem, Indian grass, the remnants of corn rows are still evident. I look across the field of waving plants and I listen to the wind. The wind has always been a great mystery to me, one of nature's powerful, invisible forces. Beyond the wind, I hear calls from an earlier time, reminders of my growing up years on a farm located less than 2 miles from where I'm standing. When I was in grade school, for whatever reason, I sent off an article on rural hunting to Outdoor Life magazine, a handwritten. I had this idea that I could write as well as those articles I was reading. I was wrong, of course. But that was the first thing that I wrote. I was probably 12 years old. I have probably 12 or 14 books now that relate in one way or another to rural history and the land. I'm writing about the land. I'm writing about the relationship of human beings to the land. I'm writing about the source of everything that allows humanity to exist. That's what I'm doing. And it takes many forms. It takes sometimes a form that looks very trivial. And at other times, it becomes very philosophical. Sometimes it's poetic. Sometimes it's just a dumb ha-ha story. On a rainy day in summer, after the morning chores were finished, my father, my brothers, and I often crawled up the wooden ladder to the haymow and sprawled on the fresh hay to talk and rest, and listen to the raindrops patter on the wood-shingled roof. In dry weather, I could see sunlight shining through the shingles in many places, and I always wondered why the roof didn't leak. But once the rain started, the cedar shingles swelled and filled the cracks.
Jerry is a master with the written word, and along with that, he is a masterful storyteller. So even if you come from a big city, really know nothing at all about the Midwest, and you just by perchance would come upon Jerry speaking and telling one of his stories, you would be totally captivated.
The Christmas program was a community-wide event. All of the neighbors came, whether they had kids or not, the uncles and the aunts and the cousins from far distant places. And Mrs. Jinks is playing the piano, has her back to the stage, has her back to the students, has her back to this little mouse that stuck its head out top of the piano, and it parades right across, stops right in the middle of the stage, right by the naked doll, the baby Jesus. Well, the away and the major went out with giggles. The front row is hoo-high. Mrs. Jinks's neck is getting redder and redder. She is angry, and pretty soon, everybody in the schoolroom sees this mouse, and everybody is hoo-high, and she is fit to be tight. She whirls around in her chair and sees the mouse and starts to giggle herself. And people remember that as the most outstanding Christmas program we've ever had.
For a long time, I wanted to discount the fact that I had grown up on a farm, that we did not have electricity, that we didn't have running water, that we milked cows by hand. All of those kinds, that I went to a country school. I didn't want anybody to know that. I wanted people to think that here is a cosmopolitan young guy. I mean, he's smart enough to graduate from college. He surely didn't have a background like I had. People often say to me, well, Apps, all you're doing is writing nostalgia. You know, that didn't get you anywhere. But sometimes, when you write something that's nostalgic, you can bring somebody into the story, and in the process, you can teach some history. They are all around us, and we take them for granted. They are the symbols of our rural past, scattered throughout the countryside, on farmsteads, in villages, and at the crossroads where dusty trails once converged. Many are easily seen, others less so, as time has aged, rusted, and hidden them behind the icons of progress.
And a man would straddle a log with one of those big broad axes and hew off on each side until it looked like that. Can you imagine how much work that would have been?
We feel very strongly and a bit chauvinistic about the talent here in Wisconsin. So we came up with Pride of Wisconsin, and Jerry Apps is the first recipient. It was just a natural. He epitomizes not only just a good, solid author, but someone who values our state.
My one-liner is, when we forget our histories, we forget who we are. When we forget our histories, we forget who we are. And today, our society is such a hurry to move on, to always on to the next thing. And so many people seldom take time to revisit where they've been. There's a line I have in one of my books that goes something like, the best of what is next has been here all along. That's a powerful line. The best of what is next has been here all along. That requires that we know what's been here all along. And that's why I'm so caught up with history.
As mentioned earlier, agricultural and manufacturing problems are sure to be addressed by the presidential candidates while they're campaigning in Wisconsin. And there are a host of other national issues that directly touch all of us. Issues such as homeland security, international trade, and what America's role in the world should be. Contemplating those issues and acting on our beliefs is the responsibility of everyone in a democracy. That's the premise behind By the People, a national project spearheaded by McNeil Lair Productions. By the People gathered citizens in 10 cities around the country this past weekend, including Green Bay, for a national day of deliberation.
Present arms.
Oh, say can you see?
Patriotism is often celebrated in song.
What so proudly we hail.
But the hard work, the heavy lifting of citizenship looks more like this.
This world's changing, and we're going to have these security measures. And
it's a bigger picture. We need to try and maybe step back from our civil liberties a little bit.
It involves discussion, consensus, deliberation.
Government spending has to be tightened.
So there's going to be a lot of cuts. We're all going to feel the pinch.
We don't have enough money to provide health care for all of our citizens in this country. We don't have enough money to finance a top-notch education system.
And different points of view. It's pretty fundamental, but sometimes we forget. Democracy is about talking.
And how do we regain those liberties if it has gone too far?
This exercise in democracy and citizenship was held in Green Bay, a day-long session where ordinary citizens got together to talk, to converse about our country.
We have not seen a good debate.
I think we need to have a thorough discussion of civil liberties, because I think there is a danger, if we are not careful, that we will impede upon civil liberties.
Why Green Bay? Titletown is in Brown County, one of the 10 sites from around the country participating in this national conversation. This national conversation with more than 700 people. The talk centers on two issues of crucial concern to our country, the economy and homeland security. And who were the talkers? Well, here are two of them, Virginia Wojnarowski and Kay Frieschlag.
Okay, zucchini's ready.
Kay Frieschlag is a homemaker who makes her home in De Pere.
Zucchini pie.
75-year-old Virginia Wojnarowski, a widow, is also from De Pere. Two different people. How do they see the issues of the economy and security? Two issues that confront our country. Kay's husband works as the chief financial officer for a company based in Atlanta. They've two children, one in college, one a year away. Like many, they're feeling a bit of a squeeze.
We put off buying another car, you know, just refinance the one we had. So you think about things a lot more. You make decisions. Let's have dinner at home tonight. Let's don't go out to eat.
Just wanted to get it started.
The economy makes itself felt in the everyday. For example, in housing. The Frieschlags plan to move to Atlanta in the next year. They have their house on the market, and Kay's noticed that it's been slow to sell.
When we moved here, we bought the house in 24 hours. It was on the market. We've been on the market 3 months, and it's just not, you know, you don't feel quite like people are jumping into moving up, changing houses. So I want to see, what do the other people feel?
This is Hank, my husband.
Virginia and her husband lived a life that was defined by work and their family.
My priority was so that they were educated and had a better life than, that they didn't have to struggle like we did. We worked hard. We worked all our lives.
And the hard work paid off. Times were good. Her husband worked for one company for 32 years. But then the company folded, and at age 53, her husband was unemployed.
The children were all, through school and away from home. And I said, it felt like we got to the top of the ladder and fell down. That was about the way it felt.
Fortunately, her husband got a job with the county. The benefits from that job have proved to be Virginia's lifeline.
Well, I'm still drawing his pension that he drew when he retired from Oakland County. So if it wasn't for Oakland County, I said, I don't know what I'd be doing.
Award in 30 minutes.
Oh. Yeah, so we all learn. Both women have a keen interest in the world. Kay participates in book clubs, reads news periodicals. She and her family have had extended periods of living abroad. That experience of being outside America, looking in, may explain a certain skepticism she has about the way America is portrayed in the media.
I think people are smarter than what the media thinks we are.
And she's skeptical about the way America is tackling the issue of homeland security.
We're playing a game. We're playing a game to try to make us feel better when I wish they would just take this money and get a few more FBI agents out there, a few more, let's learn some foreign languages.
Both women have opinions about America's place in the world, our responsibilities, our security.
If there's a threat, well, then we have to defend ourselves. But if there's no threat, I don't think we should... And I still think we have to have compassion. We need our neighbors. Our other countries are just like our neighbors. You have to get along with the neighbors.
Kay and Virginia, two people who are part of the By the People project, two people who are part of this national conversation. about our country and its future.
And the home of the brave.
So, what did people have to say during Saturday's national conversation? Well, you can find out tonight at 9 o'clock. There's a national By the People broadcast. Citizens from all over the country, including some from Green Bay, will share their views on national security, the economy, and America's place in the world. You can see that here on Wisconsin Public Television. You can also hear more from the Green Bay participants by tuning into this week's Here and Now. And now an update to a story we brought you last month. We reported that Ace Ethanol in Stanley, Wisconsin's first full-scale ethanol plant, was being prosecuted by state and federal environmental agencies for violating its air emissions permit. Well, Attorney General Peg Lautenschlager has announced a proposed settlement of the legal action. In it, ACE agrees to have new pollution control equipment in operation by late February. In addition, ACE will have to pay a penalty of $300,000. The consent decree to settle the state and federal lawsuit will still have to be approved by a U.S. District Court judge. That's our program. Thanks for joining us, and good night.
Major funding for In Wisconsin is provided by the people of Alliant Energy, who bring safe, reliable, and environmentally friendly energy to keep homes, neighborhoods, and life in Wisconsin running smoothly. Alliant Energy, offering energy-saving ideas on the web.